You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. At the start of the Winter Olympics, Layla Edwards made history the moment she stepped on the ice, becoming the first Black woman to play hockey for Team USA. While this milestone performance at this year's Games marks progress, there are still longstanding barriers to winter sports, from the relatively high cost of gear like skates and skis to limited things like ice and snow. There are a lot of factors that contribute to a lack of representation at the Winter Games, especially when you compare them to the Summer Olympics. Dr. Akilah Carter-Francique researches race, gender, social class, and the intersections with sports, education, and society, and she joins us now with her research. Welcome back to Insight.
Thank you for having me. Great to be back.
Yeah, it's been a minute. You joined us ahead of the last Winter Games, so it's been 4 years. So I would just love by starting off with you telling us more about your story, because, of course, you're a professor, you're a researcher in the world of sports, but you also started off as an athlete.
I did. A young athlete. I think I started around the age of 5. And it was due to a couple of reasons. One, because I had a ball of energy and my mom needed to keep me busy, but also due to health reasons. So I have asthma and, sport and being involved in different athletic competitions, whether it be track and field or even dance and ballet, was something that helped me utilize or learn how to really control my breathing in those other times of distress, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, you are like really invested and passionate about studying the intersection of sport and society. What does that mean to you, if you can explain that to a layperson?
Oh my gosh. What I love about sport, and my colleagues also share this, those in our sport sociology space, sport is a microcosm of society. And so all of the things that are wonderful about the world and the space are, you can see in sport, but also all the things that aren't so wonderful, you can see in sport. But I really appreciate and value athleticism, competition, seeing communities come together, seeing individuals have a win, seeing teams have a win in an athletic engagement, oftentimes producing skills that the normal person could not do. When I think of Simone Biles, when I think of those that are playing hockey or figure skating, those are skill sets. Even the skiing, the cross-country skiing, those are skill sets that the normal person does not have. So I'm just really amazed and appreciate that excellence.
Hmm. What stands out to you about this Winter Games in Milan? Have you been following any storylines or athletes that have struck you?
I follow it from the beginning to the end. My favorite part of both the Summer and Winter Olympics is the opening ceremonies. I really love and appreciate seeing those athletes walk in, seeing the uniforms that they have, and seeing the different delegations, the sizes that they have. As far as storylines, seeing the women athletes, they're kind of near and dear to me. Seeing them compete, following those that I even saw, just even last night, how they highlighted certain athletes that were mothers. And granted, we have, our men out there that have families as well, but seeing them highlight that side of them and showing their humanity. And also individuals that come from countries that you might not expect, the smaller countries. So Jamaica being there, Nigeria being there, because snow is not common or even exist in the country of Jamaica. So I'm always fascinated and again, appreciate seeing the extraordinary lengths that they go through to make and venture to those competitions.
Do you think there have been strides in the Olympics for it to be more representative of the diversity of our world? I mean, not only by race, but also by class as well.
Yes, I would definitely say that the Olympics is a space where the doors are starting to open, where you're starting to see some shifts in opening the world up to diversity. But I think at the same time, it also creates space and opportunity where, there could be more efforts that take place. But I think the Olympics is doing, in working in concert with the National Olympic Committees, the NOCs, if you will, They're working to create opportunities, whether it be having a certain number of representatives that are able to represent that country in a particular event. And that is just a great endeavor to have, because oftentimes, especially if we look historically, you may not have seen a Jamaica, you may not have seen a Nigeria, but creating opportunities for that and offering up ways for them to get involved, whether they're launched into a preliminary round. I know with the summer games, you see something called, and I don't want to mess up the name, repêchage. For those athletes that don't make the standard, or they may tumble during the games. I mean, think about it. You're in a big stage. So they have an opportunity to try again and to get themselves into a semifinal and hopefully into a final and ultimately the podium.
Oh, wow. That is super interesting. You explained a reality that just exists. Not all places have snow. It's different than, picking up a football or running track and field or soccer ball, which is more accessible to a lot more people and places. But that's not the only barrier that exists when it comes to the winter sports. And you were talking about these strides that are being done in countries like Jamaica or countries in Africa that are now being able to enter the winter sports. What more could be done to get more people to play winter sports if they don't have snow or ice in their backyard?
I think a lot of the work that I do really focuses on this notion of representation. So I think one of the things that's being done that we can want to continue to have happen is the media and having it broadcast. So people can see these different sports, because believe me, I'm watching and I'm like, I didn't know that this could be an event. For some, curling is new to them. And so I think first and foremost is learning about the events that actually do exist. And oh, okay, well, maybe we might be able to create a skate rink where we are learning how to curl, or where we're bringing some athletes in to play hockey. So I think that media presence is very helpful. Education, I work at a college, is definitely helpful to just share the different opportunities and sports that are even at the Olympic Games. Many of us don't learn about it until we're watching it on television. But what would it be to introduce this to young kids in elementary school and teach them about the different sports at the Olympic Games? And I think also, definitely working with, yes, you have the National Olympic Committees, but each of these sports has a respective federation or association that has an opportunity as well to spread the message, education, and create opportunities for young children. And I keep going to the youth to learn about these sports. So if we think about, for example, the NFL. And NFL Play 60, how they have those different programs to get young people engaged in physical activity, but through sport. At the same time, they have what's called NFL Flag. So they're introducing young children to these sports at early ages that may eventually, they may go on to be Olympians.
How big of a barrier do you think cost is? I mean, I was just talking with some friends, like a lift ticket to a ski resort is pretty expensive. I mean, even just as a hobby, if you just want to start, I mean, there is a price threshold that you need to meet to be able to enjoy it. And that's often connected to winter sports. I mean, not only not knowing about it at a young age, but even if you do know about it, being able to afford it.
Yes, I would say that cost is still the major barrier. When we look at skis, when we look at the clothing that you would have to put on just to endure the weather, those things cost. When it comes to bobsledding, the monobobs that I've seen, the skeleton sleds, there are financial requirements to purchase or even build and construct one of those particular items. And then the cost also comes with facilities. To be able to create a bobsled track, how much does that cost? And not only create it, but also maintain it. And I think those things are some of the hidden costs that we may not think of all the time. So there's definitely the financial piece to it. There's the facilities piece to it. But I think also having the education to know where to get a coach from. And that in itself, requires some finances to find, coaching, pay coaches, and all those support staff that go around that. Because one of the things that I admire and appreciate about each of these Olympians, they have created a community in and amongst themselves. They have created a team just as a single individual of personnel that help them achieve that Olympic dream. So yes, your coaches, your doctors, your massage therapists, your nutritionists, all of those things are necessary to help you on that Olympic pathway. But again, when we come back to the winter sports, there are additional costs due to those facilities, due to that equipment, and maintaining all of those things.
When it comes to physical ability, I mean, is that transferable from one sport to another? Like, two sports may seem uncommon, but if you're really talented at, say, track and field, maybe you can be good at curling or a sport that you wouldn't necessarily connect to the sport that you're initially good at.
Initially, I think looking at it, you may not think that there are those transferable skills. But I had the opportunity to just even watch the pathway and the transition of some of our athletes from our summer sports in the sport of track and field with that move into the bobsled space. I know reading up on Erin Jackson and learning about her trajectory into speed skating, she was in the roller derby. So there is an opportunity to take those skills that would be in a summer games or a considered summer activity sport and translate those into those winter activities. I was watching the cross country skiing and seeing them go up hills, and I'm thinking of our distance runners that do cross country. What would that translation be? Because there's a level of endurance that you have to have. And again, I am just really amazed by the perseverance of these athletes and watching them, and I'm thinking, I am not doing enough in my life right now, but appreciate it. And I share that with my kids as we watch the television, as we see those different competitions, and even sharing with them, you see that particular, you see you run, but you could also do this. So, just trying to open doors up even to them as they watch these past sports and even new sports that they brought on.
And we originally think of an Olympic athlete as someone who's very young, but that's not the case. I mean, in this Winter Olympics, there have been medalists like in their 40s. And the Hearst Olympic coverage team, which KCRA is a part of, they crunched some numbers and they found that over the past 40 years, the average age of a Winter Olympic medalist has steadily risen from 24 to 28 by the 2022 games. So on the one hand, you are seeing, I think, more, I guess, diversity or wide range of age range among athletes, which I would think on the surface is a good thing. But by the same token, is that also a concern? Because is there a younger generation or the next generation of winter athletes that are going to be, is that a challenge for the Winter Olympics, maybe compared to the Summer Olympics?
I don't think so. I don't think age is a concern. We see the same in the summer games. When we think of athletes, again, I go back to track and field. I think of Edwin Moses, that competed well into his 40s. And so we have an opportunity, I think it's as a human race, to be able to participate in these games and in a long, long time span. And I think that is wonderful. For many of us, again, I still consider myself an athlete, though very retired. sport is part of our identity. And so the opportunity to continue competition, continue in that community, continue to maybe introduce a young person to the sport and mentor them through it. I'm glad that we have that opportunity and that ability, and that we're seeing these individuals not only participate in the sport, but achieve and win gold medals in those sports.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Professor Akilah Carter-Franceek about how race, class, and gender intersect with sports. To broaden the conversation just a little bit, Professor Carter-Franceek, The Winter Olympics are ending on Sunday. The Paralympics are about to begin also in Italy. Does accessibility change the issues that we are discussing right now?
Yes. The notion of accessibility is so important to amplify. I have the great opportunity to work with colleagues like Donna Callahan and her All in Sport Consulting. She also has a labs conference that we put on annually in the month of either October or November. But the notion of accessibility is really important. And a lot of people don't understand, unless they're in that world, of what it means to, just as I said before, put their team together, to be able to support them competing, whether it be, again, coaches, doctors, nutritionists, but also those that make the equipment that they need to compete, whether that be a wheelchair, whether that be some sort of attachment that they have to be able to get down or get up a slope, be able to jump off of those skis. And there is, I'm not going to say a hidden cost, but there's a cost there that a lot of people don't realize what that means. In addition, what additional support persons need to come with them as they are navigating these spaces and places? Are they able to get on and off a plane? You know, are they able to get around the particular host country, understanding the ability limitations that they may have? And those are things that I think we really have to think about from host country perspective, but even as respective organizations, federations, and being able to fully support our athletes that are para-athletes.
Finally, we're having this conversation as diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA, those efforts have been experiencing a backlash under the Trump administration. I mean, we're seeing funding being threatened or cut at universities or nonprofits that pursue these efforts. You, of course, work in both of these worlds. Have you seen the appetite change over the last year and change?
I haven't seen the appetite change, happily. Those of us that were in that space beforehand, we're still in it now. We have to navigate it differently, though. And a lot of that comes with education, understanding the policy, understanding the parameters around the policy, how to best navigate it. In some spaces, we're not able to use certain words. But if you're still wanting to and need to apply for grants to, you know, obtain that support, you've just got to know those parameters and how to move in those spaces. Again, happily, I've seen continued collaboration, continued partnership, continued allyship of individuals, organizations, and corporations that are still pouring into programs that support those that have been historically marginalized. And again, that comes from a racial standpoint, from a gender identity standpoint, and from a sex standpoint, if you will, even age, you know, and ability. And so in many ways, I feel like some of us have doubled down and like we need to create spaces and places for individuals and groups to continue to thrive, because the reality is, even with legislation coming forward, we're still here. We as a people did not go away. And so we still want to offer and those opportunities. We still stay steadfast in our mission here at Benedict College, under the leadership of President Rosalind Clark Artis. We talk about the importance of being a power for good. And so we as faculty at this institution, at our HBCUs broadly, but at those that also stand for diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and social justice, we're still working to support individuals so they can become a power for good and they can thrive in their purpose.
Professor Carter Frantzeek, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you.
And that was Professor Akilah Carter Frantzeek talking to us about the ways race, class, and gender intersect with sport and the socioeconomic barriers present in winter athletics. Still ahead, we'll get a roundup of all the fun things you can still enjoy this month with Arts Talk. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.